Welcome to This Week in Craft Beer, the podcast, a weekly show where we interview the people making the magic happen in the UK craft beer scene, sponsored by Beer Nuts, premium crunchy coated peanuts for beer. This Week in Craft Beer publishes the UK's leading craft beer newsletter every Monday morning by email. To subscribe for free, please visit our website at thisweekincraft.beer. So it's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast Sim from London Beer Factory, based in the South London suburb of West Norwood. The London Beer Factory is an open exploration of beer, modern and independent, never still, always innovating, globally inspired, locally minded. Sim, please introduce yourself and then tell me about your beer journey and how you came to start London Beer Factory with your brother Ed in 2014.
Hi Rob, I'm Sim, Managing Director at London Beer Factory. As you just mentioned, yes, we set up the London Beer Factory in 2014, me and my brother, which was a journey, I suppose, that started whilst I was very young. My dad was in the drinks trade in various forms. He had a wholesaling business, he had a couple of pubs and off licenses.
Right.
So he was far more wine orientated. Mm-hmm. And actually my brother, I guess the start of our journey started, he went and studied wine at Brighton University. Mm-hmm. And I made the error, really, of studying physics and astronomy.
Oh, wow.
up in Durham, so nothing really beer-related. But I suppose it was a place where I certainly started drinking a lot more. Mm-hmm. But really, the start of it was post-uni for me, when I started homebrewing with a friend, having moved to London. And that was going back to 2008. And was sort of the beginning of the craft beer scene in London, and that's sort of where the journey began for me. I sort of starting as a home brewer. I actually was then working the city and did my accountancy exams and spent 7 years working in banking. But that really led me to want to do something else completely, because I didn't enjoy that at all. From there, teamed up with my brother and set up the London Beer Factory.
Which were the London-based breweries that were particularly influencing you in your late homebrew days?
Going back to 2011, 2010, 2011, the Colonel was definitely a brewery that influenced me. And I remember making trips to the brewery when they first set up and were just selling bottles on a table, sort of pre the madness of the Bermondsey Beer Mile and,
right.
You know, hundreds of people filing through the door. But yeah, just starting to get my hands on some really interesting beers from them and then some more interesting beers from abroad over in Belgium and America.
Right. And would you mention any American breweries at that time that were particularly influential for you?
For me, it was just the bigger ones, because there wasn't a huge amount coming over, but it was people like Sierra Nevada and Flying Dog, Sam Adams, and then I've always had an interest in Belgian beers. We can talk about how that sort of manifested itself in creation of the Barrel Project.
Definitely.
But yeah, so getting influence from Trappist breweries and breweries over in Brussels like Cantillon, Trafontaine, places like that.
Fantastic. That's a major source of inspiration, isn't it, for a lot of people in the industry, not just this decade either, but for many years past, I'm sure. But before we get too much further, anyway, let's talk about this first beer. So this is I'd Rather Squeege, 6.5% fruited sour, packed with blackberry, raspberry and blackcurrant. We were just talking about it before we started recording. It's an absolutely incredible colour, and it's a lovely balance of all my favourite fruits in a single beer, which is quite delightful.
It's really
delicious. Yeah. Thumbing through Untappd this afternoon, and somebody described it as like drinking a hedgerow, which I think is a superb description of it. You know, it's in all the best possible ways. There's no thorns. Or
hopefully.
Sticks,
no. I suppose you can take that one or two ways, can't you?
But it's lovely.
The reason that I wanted to share this beer with you I wanted to go through two beers. One, talk about what we do at the Clean Side of the Brewery, and then later on, one of our Barrel Project beers. So this is one of the sour beers that we've recently made at the brewery, which we make kettle sours at the brewery. So we just use like a Lallemand lactobacillus yeast pitch and do an initial boil and then send over to our souring tank. Leave for a couple of days at 40 degrees. This beer was sort of us really wanted to just hit that fruit as much as possible. So It's fruits of the forest. It's raspberries, blackberries, and blackcurrants. And I suppose it's a bit of inspiration from during lockdown, looking at Instagram posts and breweries like the Vale, and seeing like
the crazily
heavily fruited sours that you get over there, and just rather than trying to do anything too delicate, just doing like a big bold punch of fruit. The sour beers that we make in the brewery, they're just very clean lacto sours. Right. So there's no sort of subtlety, and there's no delicate flavors that we're trying to work with. We're just trying to drop the pH down to sort of around 3.2, 3.3, just to give it a nice tartness.
Right.
And then we just wanted to, with this one, just go as bold as possible with the fruit. So it was just a matter of upping those levels as much as we could. And just putting out a beer for summer that we thought was really nice, refreshing beer. I've actually drunk it on ice a couple of times, and you know, that sounds like a shocking thing to do with a beer. You like put some ice in it, but with a beer like this, it actually works really well. It's
I don't see why you wouldn't
like drinking a bit of a cocktail, and sort of on a summer's evening. It's quite just a nice, refreshing beer to sort of start your evening with. So I would say give that a go, if you know, especially when you're drinking a 4.4.2, it makes it last a little bit longer. So just for us was just one that we thought was a nice one to get out for summer, especially after lockdown.
Is this the first sort of really heavily fruited sour that you've made?
I would say definitely at these levels. We've not done anything on the clean side at this level. Over at the Barrel Project, yes, we do 200-300 grams per liter of whole fruit that goes into our fruiting tanks.
Right.
But that sort of level at the brewery, we've never gone for the triple fruited as heavy as this before. We do a blood orange and cranberry sour. And that's probably about half the amount of fruit that goes into this. So this was just a sort of a nice punchy one.
I think this is terrific.
I mean, everyone, we obviously having the Barrel Project back open now, so we've sort of heard people there ordering it and enjoying it. So that's always nice to see. People on Untappd seem to have enjoyed it. So generally pretty pleased with it.
Excellent. No, I think it's a delicious beer. It's definitely comparable to some of the best examples I've had in the UK. I think, you know, obviously North are the real trailblazers, aren't they, with this style, the triple fruited ghost. I think the level of fruitiness in this compares extremely well to the North beer. So I would strongly encourage people to seek this out, especially if they like the fruits of the forest flavors, which surely everybody likes those flavors, don't they? Are you planning to do some more of these, or as you say, it's really a summer project and you sort of put it away again till next spring, really, we
did release another sour with it. Cool. We did a competition on Instagram to see what people wanted to ask to brew next. So people came up with suggestions, and we whittled it down to 16 of our favorites, and then we pitched them one against the other, and the beer that won was a pink lemonade goes. We released that at the same time, and that's called Is This What You Wanted, which is obviously quite a straightforward, understandable name given the competition beforehand. the name for this one probably is bit more of an in-joke, really. Yes. I'd rather squeege, which is just having a little laugh with our brewers. That there's a particular brewer that often comes up with that line when he's not that keen on doing something. It's a little poke of fun at that, really.
It's nice enough, isn't it? The beer's got to have a name. It may as well be something different. And anybody that searches for it on Untappd is not going to confuse it with anything else. So that's a good
thing. Exactly. You know, that's always helpful. Find, so, no one else using that name. So you're safe.
Excellent. So let's get to the Barrel Project then, Sim. I literally did that myself a couple of weeks ago on my first venture into central London post-lockdown. So I had a very enjoyable afternoon in there. But I think you opened in 2017, if I'm right?
Yes. But it had a makeover. We opened initially, and then we did a makeover in 2018 to get it properly looking at how it is now.
All right, so I didn't go there pre makeover, but I think it's superb. I mean, it's such a beautiful venue. I don't think you could appreciate looking at it from the street quite what's before. It's obviously a fairly substantial railway arch that you enter into. But I think, you know, it opens up beautifully inside, doesn't it? So when you get in there and the, you know, the line of barrels down the left and the really nice tiled bar on the right, terrace, whatever you want to call it, on the, you know, towards the back to give you some more seating. I think it's almost like it was purpose built for table service, really, which is really nice. So it really is playing into the current situation extremely well. I don't see how there can be a better central London location for mixed firm farmhouse beers. I haven't found one anyway. I don't know, perhaps you know of one, but I don't think there is. I think if you're interested in something other than just drinking the standard styles that everybody's pouring, if you're looking for something a bit different, which is not to say you don't have stouts and New England IPAs and lagers there, because of course you do, but you've got a wonderful selection of really interesting barrel aged and mixed firm beers there as well. So it's a great place. I love it.
Yeah, we're really proud of it. I mean, it's a great location, obviously being at one end of the beer mile, the sort of London Bridge end. It also backs onto Mortimer Street Market, so it's on the weekend when, you know, all the food vendors are on the market, it's a really nice place to visit and get some lunch and then stop in for a drink or two, hopefully. But yeah, in terms of where it came from, it was born out of a trip. I mean, obviously, I've always had appreciation of Belgian beers and wine. And I've always enjoyed visiting wineries, and I've always thought that they do such a good job of sort of a visitor's attraction, and the wine cellars always look so beautiful. But we really got a lot of inspiration when we took the brewing team to Belgium for a Christmas party, which must say that would have been in January 2017, just the other side of Christmas. And we had a great weekend and visited the sort of the hotspots, to saw Cantillon, Brewery Boone, Gerstilken, nice. Trois-Fontaines, and the whole team just got inspired, and we really felt, well, like if we're gonna dabble in doing a bit of mixed fermentation, barrel aged beers, we can't dabble. We need to do it properly. So that's why, one, we always knew we need to do it on a separate location to the clean side, but we also knew if we're going to do it, we need to do somewhere we can have a bar that actually gives a bit of income to a part of the business that is obviously it takes a long time to get going and to mature, and now to be at a stage where we've got 200 reconditioned wine barrels, of which about 160 are currently full. We've got 24 taps on the wall, and we've got a 9 or 10 of those beers that have come out of our barrel from the barrel project. So it's taken a while to get to this stage, but it's been great, for me it's happened by getting the right people on board as well. It's not something that we had nearly enough experience in, and we had our head of operations, Brett Moore, join us originally to set it up. And he did that for a year until he moved over to the head of operations role. And then we've got a guy called Braden Liu, who came from Wildflower in Sydney, Australia. So, and he's brought a lot of experience with him. So it's something that obviously continues to develop, and it's something that is very much in its infancy. But it's something that I'm looking forward to seeing over time just grow, and the quality of the beers that come out of that should continue to grow along with it.
Fantastic. It's been open for 3 years now. So, you know, I assume that you're only now just starting to, you know, have a decent supply of barrel aged beers there. So it's as wonderful as you say, it can only get better and better and better now. So
we're hoping.
It's a beautiful,
right. And it's also about the setting. It's about going there and what you say about table service is, obviously, we're in a bit of a strange time at the moment with the need to social distance. And on a Saturday, it used to be very busy, and it probably wasn't the setting that people would want to experience those beers in. But now everyone's sat down at the table. Obviously, financially, we're taking a bit of a hit in terms of what we can take. But it actually means that people get to enjoy the place in the way that it should be enjoyed. So it's definitely something we need to think about in terms of how we control numbers in the future. Because it is as important, sort of, that enjoyment and that appreciation. That's what I think is what's, obviously, before we came on air, you know, we talked about some American breweries and how well they do hospitality. And you don't forget those times when you visit someone and you really enjoy and you have a really good time. So I think it's something we need to think about a bit. And, you know, it's hopefully it's one of the silver linings we can take from the period we're in at the moment.
You're absolutely right. It's always difficult for a business to turn customers away, isn't it? Just it's you know, it sticks in the craw of any business to do that. But I do think that there's a few things that are going to sustain out of this summer of misery that we've all had. And I think, you know, some of those things are the ability to book tables, potentially the ability to order on an app. At a socially distanced beer festival in Reading last weekend at Phantom, which is one of my local breweries. And, you know, they had it beautifully organized. They've got a great app, great list of beers delivered to your table, ordered on the app, all paid contactless. And so that worked really nice. I'm not suggesting maybe that would be, that might or might not be appropriate, but do think that I would like to think that in the future you'll still be able to book a table and maybe have table service there. But
yeah,
it's hard, as you say, to turn half your customers away on a busy Saturday just so that the other half can sit in comfort. It's a tricky thing, a balance to strike. I don't quite know what the answer is, but
no, but it's definitely worth thinking about. It's definitely worth thinking about. And, you know, we've gone through this period and it's worth thinking, you know, what do we want to be giving our customers? What experience do we want them to have? So
are you distributing any of those barrel aged beers beyond the barrel store? Do you?
Most of the draft is just on site. We do, we do a few extra kegs, which sometimes find them their way out to sort of the craftier bars and retailers around London. We've also recently put them on Ebria. So actually we've started selling some out of London as well.
Nice.
Which is really nice. But then we're also bottling everything, all the beers that get released as well. So they do make their way out, but it is very sort of limited runs. We sort of typically do two or three barrels of each beer, but sometimes it's a single barrel release.
Right.
So we're talking, you know, a yield of 200 litres. So it just depends on how many we want to put into keg, how many into bottle.
How do you distribute those bottles then? Are they only sold from your web store or?
Not web store, on Ebria, and then through a couple of distributors. Actually, I think we're actually sending some abroad for the first time. So I think there's a little bit going out to Europe.
Nice.
But it's my brother that looks after the sales side of things. So he would know better than me exactly where it goes. I get a bit of an inkling, but that's the side that he looks after.
It's nice. That's the type of beer that you can imagine there would be an international market for. And, you know, and obviously it's great to get your name out there, isn't it? As a brewery worth noting in London, because hopefully then when people come to visit London, they'll seek you out, and they certainly should be doing that, I think.
I mean, up until the period we're in now, there was a lot of tourists that would come down the mile, and it's really nice if people have come specifically to see the London Beer Factory, the Barrel Projects. That's a really nice thing. I mean, I know that's the case for a lot of our neighbours. You know, people definitely come down to see Anspach and Hob Day and Brew by Numbers, you know, and everyone else further down the mile. But, you know, it'd be nice if we can, in a couple of years time, if we're on their list as well. So yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I don't see why you wouldn't be, and you're offering something which most of those other guys are not.
It's a difficult one to know how big the market is for mixed fermentation and sort of those sour beers, and I do think that it's a growing market. It's something that we need to continue to educate people about, and that's definitely part of our job, is not just to make beer and just expect to be able to sell it. You've got to market it right, and part of that marketing is educating people, and
definitely
that's something that we're unfortunately not able to do so easily now.
No.
But in terms of doing tastings, that's something that we'd only just started really before coronavirus hit us. But I've started doing some. We'd like to be able to do it at least on a quarterly basis, and then hopefully more like on a monthly basis at the Barrel Project.
Right.
But yeah, that's something where it's really interesting. If we can be getting out sort of information that's new to people and really capturing their imagination that way.
Yeah.
I think that's really powerful.
I think the market for sours or mixed firm is obviously only ever going to be a subset of the total craft beer market, but it's certainly one that's grown significantly in the last couple of years in the UK. And I think it has probably some more growing to do. So I think you've got a potentially quite big untapped market there. Because I think you guys have got a really interesting balance between the core range, as you say, which is in the supermarkets, and the experimental end of the range, for want of a better turn of phrase. And so I'd be curious just to get a bit of commentary of how that's evolved, and if it was all sort of strategically mapped out, or whether you staggered into it, you know, for want of a bit. I don't mean that in any way disrespectfully.
I wish it wasn't more strategically planned out. No, I mean, like most businesses, we try and operate with forecasts and plans in place about products that we want to launch and markets we want to launch into, you know, whether that's within the UK, outside the UK, whether that's sort of within the restaurant industry, within the retail grocery market, or whether it's in sort of the pub groups. We have plans, but you never know what's around the corner. So you can't always, the business doesn't always follow those plans as you might expect.
Sure.
Our movement into Tesco is probably an example of that. We were going to list with them just regionally within London, and they really liked the Hazy Days, and they were really keen to get hold of that and wanted to push that nationally. So that went a lot quicker than we expected and has sort of spearheaded our work with them. And we've been really grateful to see how popular it's been, and it's by far our biggest selling beer in can, but also on draft, mainly around London. But in terms of our split between our core range, what we do with specials, we do the Barrel Project. I mean, obviously the Barrel Project is easy to keep nice and separate. In terms of our specials and our core range, it's definitely something that has evolved with us, I would say. We've always been of the belief that we like putting out new beers, and we at the moment we try and put out at least two specials a month.
Right.
And we let those sort of evolve with our own tastes and preferences, and they're very much born out of conversations at the brewery between brewers and everyone, you know, the sales guys, marketing, you know, everyone's sort of encouraged to give input.
Right.
And then we're kind of fluid between our specials and core range. And if there's something that's gone particularly well, then we're happy to bring it in for core range. And then equally, if we feel like something's sort of plateaued a bit, we'll take it out of the core range. And what I think is important for us is that we keep evolving and we keep trying to improve. But also, I feel that it happens organically from the guys at the brewery, all of us having an interest in what we're doing. And we want to make the beers that we want to drink ultimately. Mm. And I feel like that's the way that the direction's sort of led. In an ideal world, we'd brew different beer every day, I think. You can't quite run a business like that. So no. We've got to have some that stick around a while.
Anytime your brewery becomes regimented and we're brewing the same five beers every week, then you know that it's lost its magic, hasn't it, to some extent, I think. And you know, I'm sure not to be disrespectful to anybody that works in the brewing industry that where they only make five beers, but I'm sure your staff didn't come to work for London Beer Factory in order to just brew five beers every week. So right. You know, you want to have Hazy Days, pays the bills, and everybody gets to geek out with the really funky stuff in between. So yeah. I think that's definitely a great balance.
And we've got to differentiate ourselves from what the big guys offer. Mm-hmm. In that respect, and part of that's making it an attractive place to work in terms of, you know, people being able to engage with what's going on, and try and give input and yeah, exactly. It is more about brewing interesting beers and continually pushing what we're doing with it, I think.
I've got one more Tesco's question, and then I promise not to mention them again.
That's all right.
In your conversations with them, does it ever come up that we'd like them, at least when I say we, I'm talking about craft beer fans, would like them to have those beers in a chill cabinet in the larger supermarkets and not just in the metro stores?
We do talk to them about it. It's something that they push for as hard as we do. So the buyers 100% push for that. They would love everything to be refrigerated. The only positive in terms of the fact that some of the stores aren't refrigerated is that the turnaround's pretty quick.
Right.
I mean, we send beer to Tesco on a weekly basis.
Okay.
So they don't sit on it.
That's nice. Yeah.
It goes quickly, so it's not hanging around. And obviously, if it's not going to be in a fridge, you want it on the shelf for as short a time as possible. So that's where they try and keep, probably more for cost reasons more than anything else, but they keep their supply chain as short as possible.
Right. Yeah.
Which I guess I think we'd all love to see supermarkets mimic what they have in the States. And, you know, you go down an aisle and the whole aisle's dedicated to craft beer and everything's in a fridge. And it's fantastic. So I think we're heading that direction, but I from the sounds of things, it's just going to take a bit of time.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Good. I didn't want to let you let the subject move on without asking that question. It's been bugging me for a while. Let's take a short break, Zim. This Week in Craft Beer, the podcast, is sponsored by Beer Nuts. Beer Nuts is a British company inspired by the European fashion for pairing savoury snacks with different beer styles. Beer Nuts are premium crunchy coated peanuts and come in three great flavours: classic, masala curry and jalapeno. They are packaged in 100% recyclable, plastic-free single-serve cans and are vegan-friendly. Next-day delivery is available from their webshop at beernuts.co.uk, spelled B-I-E-R. Beer Nuts are the ultimate beer pairing snack, perfect for pubs, taprooms, bars, bottle shops and more. For details of a special offer, please see page 7 of our weekly newsletter at thisweekincraft.beer. So I'm back with Sim from London Beer Factory for the second half of the show. Sim, let's talk about your crowdfunding in 2018. My understanding is you crowdfunded a mobile cool ship. It was quickly becoming a quirky fixture, I would say, of the UK craft brewing scene before lockdown.
Managed to make a few trips out. For those that don't know, so it's obviously trying to use the method that the Lambert breweries use over in Belgium. So boiling up wort, trying to create as many long chain sugar molecules as possible, and then pumping that wort into a cool ship, which for us is 750 litres. And we had it specifically made by Gravity Brewing, and it sits in the back of our pickup truck. The idea being that we take it around the country to weird and wonderful places, but typically places where we're going to try and pick up some bacteria, some yeast, some wild yeast, and hopefully start fermenting some beer and get some interesting flavors from the local area. And it was something that we were able to do a few times, and we had great plans for it this year. We'd actually been trying to plan a trip up to Scotland, but unfortunately that's all fallen by the wayside at the moment.
You did, I think the last one that I could track that you did was with Fallen Acorn. Was that right down the south coast?
Yeah. Brett and Braden had a rather cold winter's night down on the south coast.
I saw there was reference to camping out, and you know, you were glad you had the Imperial Stouts there to get you through.
Yeah,
the evening.
I think that was probably one of the harsher ones for the guys to go to. But yeah, there's been a few trips. We went over to Wilderness over in Wales and Attic Bruco as well. So it's been a few outings. And obviously there's a bit of time needed before that beer is going to develop. That's all safely tucked away at the moment.
Obviously the next question. So these are all in barrel. Are they, you know, with what sort of delivery date in mind?
They are all in barrel. At the moment, I'm not sure if all of them are going to be drinkable when the time comes. Mm. I think we're probably looking at about a 50% hit rate at the moment.
Right.
So it's something that we might need to work on a bit in terms of doing a bit of a recce in terms of definitely finding places that we're 100% going to be able to get beer fermenting and creating the flavors that we're after. But that's all part of the journey. It's all part of doing it and learning. But yeah, typically would be looking to release the beer about 3 years after we do the cool ship brew.
What sort of success rate should you expect with a cool ship? I mean, you know, there's obviously going to be failures along the way.
Well, I think if people didn't do it outside of the Lambic region because they didn't think it could be done until, American brewers suddenly decided that actually, it wasn't just for the Belgians to enjoy. So you go and visit cool ships in the UK and people do spend a lot of time making the rooms hospitable for microorganisms that are going to help with the process of inoculating the beer. So I think once you've got the right setup within a brewery, you should be pretty successful on a continuous basis.
Right.
As long as you've got the right temperature overnight and that sort of thing. But the way that we're doing it, which is sort of out in the wild, chancing our luck, success rate is going to be a lot lower.
Yeah.
About that.
Well, that makes sense. I interviewed Bates at Duration a few weeks ago. He's put one in, hasn't he? Just lately.
Yeah, and it looks fantastic.
And I've got All Day Brewing scheduled in a few weeks' time, and I think they have probably got one as well.
Yeah, there's a few more cropping up, so it's nice. I mean, from our perspective, you know, the more people that are interested in that side of things, the better. You know, the more that there's other people that we can talk to and learn from. That's sort of the bigger that community can grow, the better. That's our view, I think.
Let's talk about this second beer, Sim.
Yes.
It's Dusk, 5.8% wild ale. It's as we were talking about the barrel project earlier, this is obviously a product from that endeavor. Can you give us a bit of background to this?
Of course, yes. So Dusk is part of our, we have two wild ales that we're sort of constantly producing. This is the first blend of Dusk, which is the darker beer, and we have Dawn as well, which is our lighter saison, and it's a blend of our stock sour beer that we have. So as I mentioned previously, we've got 200 reconditioned wine barrels, of which about 160 are full at the moment, and we typically brew either lighter golden beers or darker beers, and that's because we want to have a stock that's constantly sort of evolving. We top it up every couple of weeks, so we'll try and do a brew every 1 or 2 weeks. And the reason I wanted to taste this beer with you was to just sort of, this gives you the greatest understanding of our house culture, and is sort of the base beer that we go on and then make other beers with. So the Barrel Project, we've just released blend 2 of Dusk and Dawn as well. But they're the base that will go into making our dry hopped sours, as well as if we're going to be fruiting beers. So we just got our hands on a load of Damsons, and those have gone into fruiting tank, and we're using the same base beer that's going into making Dusk and Dawn.
Right.
That goes into making those two beers. Nice. In terms of the process, we have a house culture which does our primary and secondary. So we do our primary in conical FV right. for the first couple of weeks, which is just the more vigorous fermentation. And then once it's died off a little bit, we'll put it into barrel to mature for typically about 9 months. Mm-hmm. And the house culture was developed by Braden, and he sourced from around the sort of Greater London area, so some in it's closer into the center of town, some further away. He got yeast samples and grew up different yeast strains just by adding a bit of wort and growing up, and we did all sorts of different tests to sort of bring the house culture together, and it's something that's going to evolve over time. But I find this particularly interesting because although it's a dark beer, you're not getting a huge amount of any sort of malt characteristics from it. A touch perhaps, but it certainly doesn't taste how it might look. So it's got a nice sort of ruby red color.
Yeah.
But typically that sort of typical sort of mixed fermentation nose, obviously a bit of Brett coming out.
Yeah.
It's got a good kick of lactobacillus, lactic acid when you taste it. It's got a good acidity to it, but it's got a nice funk to it as well, which is obviously the contrast to the beer that we were drinking earlier, which is sort of really bold, hard hitting fruit, and this is far more delicate, sort of balancing that sort of little bit of funk we're getting from the Brett with the acidity that we're getting from the lactobacillus and pediococcus, and balanced out by aging in barrels. So
right. So you said that they're all reconditioned wine barrels, but specifically what type of wine?
Red wine.
Yep.
But the reason I emphasize the word recondition is because we're not looking to get any flavor from the oak really. And when they're reconditioned, they toast them. It's got a light toast. I think 95% of the barrels we have a light toast. We've got a few that have a darker toast that we'd actually be looking to get something from the flavor of the wood.
And you would tend to be putting stouts into those barrels, would you? Or?
Stouts, yeah, exactly. Something that we might want, like just a darker beer that we just want to get a bit of flavor from.
Yeah, a brown ale or something. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We recently released an Eau de Brune.
Yes, I had that at the barrel store a couple of weeks ago, which was really good. Yeah.
So that sort of thing would go in a darker taste.
Yeah,
perhaps.
Excellent. This is really good. As you say, it's quite subtle flavors, but there's lots going on, isn't there? It's really nice. Nice.
Yeah. It's just a lot more delicate. A lot more. I think it does a good job of showcasing the balance that we're trying to create. Brett and Braden, they taste all the barrels and then they decide which ones are going to blend together to go into making these. So it's not like we're just picking out a barrel and this is getting bottled. It's thinking about what level of acidity is going to work with, you know, something that perhaps has got a very Brett forward flavor to it from one barrel, blending those together to get the finished product.
There's a real, you know, there's a very, very high level of skill going on there, I'm sure, isn't there? It's, you know, which is not to say that.
And a lot of barrels to taste on. I know Braden does it.
Somebody's got to do it.
Every couple of weeks. So keeps him busy, that's for sure.
Let's pivot to talk about social media and how much attention you pay to what people are saying about individual beers or London Beer Factory in general. Is that something that you focus much on, or you just sort of let it get on with itself?
It's something obviously we're definitely aware of. Different people in the business put different emphasis on it. So James, who looks after our marketing, is, you know, aware of everything that's going on and does all of our Instagram and mm-hmm. Twitter and Facebook postings. I think because we sell beer in supermarkets, we see some stuff on the supermarket forums and people engaging on those, which can be positive. You know, sometimes they're not always positive, and you know, it's always a bit hard to take when it's someone not being quite so nice about one of your beers. But I think you've got to be aware, and you've got to be, you know, ultimately it's your customers that are on there, or potential customers. So it's very important that you're aware of what people are saying, and you know, if there's something that you can do to change a message, if it's not the message you want to hear, then you've got to go out and do that. So it's something that I think, especially with lockdown, has obviously become far more important. I mean, we found that it was a great way for advertising for the online shop, and it really helped draw in people that didn't know about London Beer Factory. So, you know, social media is an incredibly powerful tool. And I think, you know, in terms of when people are talking about your business that you've set up and obviously you've worked hard at, take on the criticism. But if it's not criticism, then you don't need to get too hung up about it, basically.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice summary of it. As you say, you ignore it at your peril, because those are potentially your customers, and they're telling you, they've gone to the trouble of telling you what they think, and you might not perhaps like to hear some of it, but you probably ought to hear it. You know, and you can choose what to act on and what to ignore, can't you? But I think you
absolutely
to ignore it all is a mistake. So sort of leaning on then, how much do you let the market influence the beers that you're planning?
Well, we did very much so in the case of that competition we ran. We 100% let them let the customers decide, and they came up with a great decision. You know, the winner being a pink lemonade goes was you know, it was a beer that we've all enjoyed making and drinking. So typically, I think everyone's influenced by the market, because the market evolves. And maybe I'm wrong and I'm saying everyone, because you know, there's obviously the sort of more old school breweries that sort of do their thing and they do what they do. But you know, they'll have their customers in their market that want that. So it's, you know,
it's fair.
I guess the market shapes us all, and it's what we choose to engage with. That, I mean, we definitely try to evolve. So I don't know if it's the market that we're being shaped by, or maybe the market's shaping our individual views, possibly, you know, from the beers that we're drinking, especially during lockdown and being able to get hold mail order and staying home. And actually, I mean, I've got a young child, so I'm like, you know, I spend a lot more time at home than I used to, and buying beers online makes, you know, it's so easy to do now that we're all spending more time at home. So
sure.
I think we've got a definite belief in what we're about in terms of what beers we like making, which is typically sort of hazy IPAs, sours, the odd stout. That's what we like making. Those are the beers we like drinking.
Right.
I mean, I know we've not really talked about any IPAs, but that hazy IPAs is probably what we drink more than anything.
Right.
And there's a lot of other people that are doing the same, but you know, I guess that's what happens in life, isn't it? You know, fashions come and go. Look at, you know, I mean, what I find interesting about hazy IPAs in terms of how long are they going to stick around for, and are they going to be here for the long run? Going over to the States, I didn't see them disappearing.
No, I don't either.
So I kind of feel like that's a good indicator that they're going to be around for a while.
I mean, you could even argue that almost all of the growth that we've experienced in craft beer has been in exactly that category. So, you know, I don't know if this is a completely unscientific rant that I'm going off into now, Tim, so bear with me. But you know, there was a percentage of total beer sales that were craft beer, and that's clearly gone up the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, I'd formulate an argument that says that almost the entire growth has been purely in hazy IPAs, and it might even be the case that the people drinking those hazy IPAs are only going to drink those kind of beers and not anything else. So it's almost like that it's almost like it's its own category now, if that, you know, that perhaps isn't very well phrased, but you know, you kind of understand what
right.
I'm saying.
What I think is interesting is like how much is the hazy IPA taken away from like a West Coast IPA, like a more what we considered an IPA to be. I mean, we see it massively swing in that direction, but we're influenced. So when you talk about it, is that because that's the beers you want to make, or the beers that the market's making, so you want to make those? It's like, well, we've been making those for a long time. Well, a long time. We've been making those for over the last 3 years. So,
yeah.
But it's something that we're still improving on, and we're doing different things to try and make those beers better. So I feel like that's evolving anyway. A lot of it comes down to, you know, I look at our range and I'm like, well, you know, which one of these beers do I want to be drinking? What do I want to be drinking next if I can make a new beer? And hazy IPAs are a massive part of that. So
definitely.
I'm not going to shy away from that. That's definitely a big part of what we want to do.
You hear people sort of saying, oh, it's all, you know, there's only one style of beer out there now and it's no choice. But that's nonsense, of course, because there's never been a broader choice of beers than there are today. And you hear old school craft beer fans, I don't mean that disrespectfully, saying, oh, well, you know, back in my day, it was all about West Coast IPAs and now you can't find them. And so there is a market for West Coast IPAs, but I'd suggest it's a tenth of the market that there is out there for hazy IPAs. So get over it. You know, that's if you want to make one of those, don't make too many, because you might find them hanging around. You know?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's interesting, you know, because everything we did at the Bow Project is it's kind of interesting. You know, we do a few Brett IPAs as well, and some of the flavors that you get from putting Brett with a hazy IPA is just incredible. So
yep.
There's all sorts of development, you know, there's all sorts of ways that you can go with it. I mean, a brewer that's mixed firm brewer will always say, oh, it's so easy, just bang a load of hops in and hop bomb hazy IPA. It's like, well, yes, but also like there's a real skill to getting it right as well. I definitely appreciate both ends of the spectrum. And I think I think a lot of the guys at the brewery do as well.
I was reading a blog post this morning written by an American guy based in Oregon, of course, you know, sort of hop central, talking about we're now just getting into the season for fresh hop IPAs, fresh hop IPLs as well, I guess, and other hop beers. And he was saying that mostly that style of beer, and you know, from his perspective in Oregon, was only really available on draft, because it's it doesn't last very long and needs to be, if you've got to sell it within a couple of weeks, otherwise the very nature of the fresh hop flavors have dissipated somewhat. So I don't know whether this is even a thing in the UK, is it? But is it something that you've contemplated, and if so, this is a month where you should be thinking about it, isn't it?
We did do it last year and it wasn't particularly successful.
Okay.
Which is not something you always want to admit, but
no, I appreciate the honesty though.
We were really excited, and we went and picked up a load of fresh hops from Kent last year, and we made what we were just calling an English pale ale, and we just really wanted to get that fresh hop flavor out, and we didn't end up selling it because we went.
That's a shame.
So it's something we'd like to try in the future. And I saw on Instagram today, I saw a couple of breweries doing it over in the States. I've heard about some real success stories. So it's something we'll definitely try in the future. And it's something that we can definitely do. It could definitely be done in the UK, and the hop farms are 100% open to it. And they were very accommodating and sorting it out for us. So, but probably one for when times a bit more normal and we need to get some draft sales.
Well, it's just the angle of the blog post I was reading this morning was saying that, you know, for the first time, a significant amount of the fresh hop beers are going to be canned this year, because that's the only way to get them to market. And so he was speculating that some of them would be good and some won't be good. Of course, it goes without saying. But he gave an example where he said he went to a bar, went to a tap room, drank the fresh hop beer last year, got home, and had received a mail order delivery of that exact same beer in a can, opened it that evening, and it was nothing like as nice, just purely, you know, been in can for 24, 48 hours or whatever, and it had already gone off a bit from his perspective. But he was saying he thinks this year, because everybody's going to be forced to can most of their fresh hop beers, there'll be quite a significant advance in the understanding of how to do it. So, you know, he was arguing that, you know, sort of the collective expertise will be moved forward to the industry this year. And so we'll, you know, hopefully as a group figure out how to can fresh hop beers in a way that makes them at least somewhat shelf stable, and it will be for everybody's greater good. But who knows? It's an interesting rat hole to go down anyway.
Fun to think about for the future. And hopefully next year, this time next year, we're in a position where we can go ahead and do something like that.
Yeah. So where do you get your hops from?
We get them from a couple of suppliers. Well, a few suppliers. Charles Farum and Simply Hops and Brookhouse as well. But it's actually been an interesting time, because obviously with coronavirus and lockdown and people not producing as much, we found that varieties that weren't typically available have become available. So we've managed to get our hands on some Galaxy and some Nelson.
Nice.
So we're about to release, I think our next special that's going to be released is called Staring Into Space, which is a classic hazy IPA, sort of around 6%, packed full of Galaxy with a touch of Citra Mosaic in the background. Oh,
love it.
Yeah.
I'll look out for that.
It's just a hop we haven't been able to get hold of for ages.
No.
And one of the first hops I fell in love with and was just like, this is incredible. That sort of pineapple aroma that you can get from it. Yeah. I just think it's amazing. So looking forward to that one coming out. But yeah, it's been nice in a way, weirdly, that we've found ourselves in a position that, you know, we're not scrambling around trying to get hold of hops that we couldn't normally get hold of. So
very good.
Looking forward to actually not having the stressing of the past. So long may that continue.
What have you got planned for the remainder of 2020 in terms of beer releases? Anything interesting you can tell us about?
So upcoming, we've got the one that I just mentioned, the sort of Galaxy IPA Staring to Space. We've got more of an oatmeal IPA, so just going hard on the oats.
Nice.
With a load of kiwi hops. That's a double IPA. It's going to be around 8.5%. And that's going to be sort of our second release, special release coming up. On the Barrel Project side, we've got a few things on the horizon. We've got a Nelson Sauvin dry hopped saison. We also have a honey beer that we made with honey from Bermondsey bees. So that was just it was amazing going down there. They're right on Bermondsey Street. Added that honey to barrel, and then actually used it to prime as well when we were bottling.
Okay.
And we've also got an elderflower saison that we foraged some elderflower from around Hackney Marshes. And right. Not that it's known for its elderflower, but where Braden got it from.
There's a few trees around the edges, so you can...
Yeah, exactly. And then we sort of transferred the beer over the elderflower. And that's come out, that's really nice. It's come out really well. It's come through nice and strong.
Very good.
So some interesting stuff. And yeah, so on the special side, we'll be doing plenty more, but we typically sort of plan them sort of a month or two in advance. So
right,
all a bit of a work in process on that side.
So I do a thing where I ask you to give a shout out to Little Guy. And what I mean by that is I'd like you to mention a small local business, part of the craft beer ecosystem that you're particularly impressed by and you'd like to draw attention to.
A small brewery that we've worked with, that we're good friends with, who don't really need a mention because they're doing great guns themselves, is Little Monster. That we did our collaboration with, that I mentioned earlier, Tokolosh. Yep. Which is an eau de brune with sweet and sour chow. Sweet and sour cherry. But Brendan, who's the guy that set it up, brewer, is a good friend of ours, and they're doing great things. They're making some killer IPAs, hazy IPAs, and people they're already making their own noise, so they're all good. But I'm really impressed with what they're putting out. He's a top man. He's always good fun to hang out with. So. if anyone's not tried their beers, I would highly recommend giving them a go.
Very good. I had a collab of his on the show last week, actually, with Pipeline. That was the delicious. Yeah. Monster Wave. Yeah, really nice. And I've actually got Brendan booked in to do a podcast in a few weeks' time. So,
brilliant.
So I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah. Anybody else you can mention?
I mean, I live in Herne Hill, and there's a nice little bottle shop called Wild and Lees. A guy called Liam runs it, and he's a really nice guy and has always supported us. So if you're passing through, if you're stopping off in Brockwell Park and need a few beers, Wild and Lees is just under the railway arch and a good place to visit.
Excellent. I mean, you know, the independent bottle shops are the sales force, aren't they, for your business to a large extent?
100%. Yeah. And they're always run by, you know, great people that are really interested in what they're selling, really engaging, and, you know, typically very helpful in terms of, you know, enabling you to pick out something you want. So
excellent. Thank you. I will mention those in the show notes as well, so people can find that easily. So let's do the wrap-up question then, which is, what would be your ultimate happy hour? Where would you be? Who would you be with? And what would you be drinking?
So you actually mentioned them previously. And this is, we did a trip, a few guys from the brewery last year when we were allowed to go abroad to Denver, to CBC. But I, during lockdown, I followed Treehouse Brewing. And I feel like I need to go there. It's like, it looks so good. It's like, I mean, if we could do a trip, you know, another trip one day with a few guys from the brewery, go out to Treehouse and drink some New England IPAs, I think that'd be a pretty happy hour for me. But yeah, there's plenty of places that I'd love to visit. They just look like they've got a killer setup.
They do. It's amazing.
And as I mentioned when we were off air, you know, the Americans are so welcoming. We actually went to New Belgium when we were in Fort Collins, and I just couldn't believe that when they found out we're from a brewery, you know, they were just giving us beers and showing us around, and, you know, just had a great time. And there's so many places that you visit, you know, even the big places, you know, like New Belgium, that they really look after fellow brewers. And, you know, there's plenty of places that I could list that are like that as well. But yeah, Treehouse just looks beautiful. So
it's pretty special. It's in the middle of nowhere, so you need a designated driver, unfortunately. But apart from
that is a shame.
So it's a complete destination. You know, there's another way to describe it. It's you know, they must have parking for at least 1,000 cars, maybe 50. You know, they've got three massive parking lots and parking attendants. The queue for the can release each day goes right along the length of one of the car parks, and you know, and so you can be queued. You can be queuing for an hour or two, really, to get to the front of the queue. And they have quite a significant can release each day of 10, 12 different beers, and they give you a little tick list as you're queuing up as to tell you what you can buy of each. So, you know, the really special bit, you know, I was lucky enough to find King Julius there, which is like their almost like their sort of flagship special release that was on. But you could only buy two cans of that. 2 440s was all you were allowed to buy.
Wow.
But on the other hand, I hesitate to describe them as cooking beers because that's terribly disrespectful to Treehouse, but you know, they will let you buy several 24 can slabs of the, you know, the more readily available beers. So people are queuing up with sack barrows there, literally to buy now everything of each of the different cans that they could buy, loading them onto the back of pickup trucks, presumably to then sell on. I assume these guys have got their own business reselling these beers on, you know, goodness knows what platform, I don't know where, but, you know, they were all buying more beer than they could possibly need. You know, these weren't bottle shops stocking up, I don't think. I'm pretty sure these were independent sort
people
of...
People just selling it to their mates.
So these beers are in such high demand that I think you can probably move on a 4-pack at a fairly significant profit if you're willing to sort of send it, you know, from one coast to the other kind of things.
And how was it just hanging out there? Was it a nice place?
So the tap room wasn't open when I was there, unfortunately. It only opens, I think, maybe Saturday and Sunday, or maybe Friday and Saturday. So it was only carry out sales. But you know, there's a nice bar there, and there's lots of nice outdoor seating and like a barbecue area, and, you know, sort of big covered area as well. Although I have subsequently been told that they only let you buy two beers to drink on site. They don't want people hanging around there all afternoon.
I see. So it's pretty strict. So maybe I've made a mistake in choosing them. So maybe it would only last an hour. So it's fine.
You'd be perhaps better going to Trillium, in my experience, where you can hang out all day and drink beers of a similar quality. So that would be my advice. Would be go to Trillium instead. But you know, these are first world problems we're trying to deal with, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Just going to any pub right now would be nice. To be honest,
it would. Yeah, any tap room. I've never been to a tap room that I wasn't happy to be in. That's for sure. So especially now,
it's just nice that places have opened up and you can go and have a drink.
And it's been enjoyable
ordering beers online and enjoying some good beers at home. But nothing substitutes being in a pub or a tap room. No. Getting it straight from the source. So
definitely, you know, surrounded by like-minded people. Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun, Sim. Really enjoyed the conversation. I'll be back in the barrel store as soon, or barrel project, I should say, as soon as I can get myself back.
Well, let me know when you're popping down and I'll be around too, and then we can have a drink together.
Fantastic. All right. That's great then. Thanks. Nice. Thanks. Yeah, Sim. Yep. Good evening.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
Thanks a lot. Yep. Coming up in the next few weeks, we have interviews with Wander Beyond, Three Hills and Pentrick. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you decide to subscribe to the podcast so you receive each episode automatically every Tuesday morning. If you enjoy the podcast, please tell your friends and leave us a review in your podcast app. It really helps others to discover the show. Coming soon from This Week in Craft Beer is a brand new podcast mini-series entitled So You Want to Build a Brewery? But don't worry, there'll be no brewing advice administered here. Instead, we'll be focusing on everything but the brewing, looking at some of the fine details that need to be attended to if you want to build a great business in today's competitive market. We've partnered with some of the most innovative suppliers to the UK craft brewing industry to bring you a short series of episodes, each focused on a specific aspect which can really make a difference to your business. Please subscribe now so you don't miss an episode. Launching on Friday the 28th of August, it's So You Want to Build a Brewery?